Sow retention is the thing that has stood out. Sow retention is responsible for so much of the efficiencies in pig production today. It's an absolutely fundamental figure, and it's key to process control, and it's very, very important. And the context I look at this through is the three E's. I look at the economic implications of what I'm looking at. I look at the ethical implications of it, you know, the animal welfare effects and all the rest of the way we manage our animals. And I'm looking at the environmental impact, the efficiencies there as well. I look at efficiency and I look at responsibility within that context of the three E's.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. AB Vista, new nutritional perspectives and novel enzyme applications to drive pig production.
Hi-D from DSM Firmenich can improve your pig's vitamin D status. Hi-D offers pure, proven performance to help your pigs thrive.
Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way.
Market growth. We're building a bigger appetite for pork. Learn more at porkcheckoff.org.
AccuFast. The best way to predict the future is to create it. Start creating your future today at AccuFastSwine.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Swine It podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Donovan, your host today, and I'd like to introduce you to our guest, Stephen Hall. Stephen is with Stephen Hall Management, Quill, and Pig Limited. He's a production strategist, an international data analyst, and a writer. Stephen describes himself as a non-academic from the University of Life. Stephen, thank you for joining us today.
It's a pleasure and a privilege. Thank you.
So Stephen's worked in the pig production industry for over 50 years, and he has a multitude of experiences. And so, Stephen, nobody knows you better than yourself. So I'd like you to introduce yourself a little bit. Just tell us about where you got to where you are today and some of those experiences.
Okay. I first went onto a farm at the age of 12. I don't come from a farming family. I fell in love with the pigs straight away because my first experience on the farm was to see a litter of pigs born. And that was it. I was sold into the industry from that point. I then worked in school holidays and weekends through to my school leaving age at 16 and went to work on a farm. I've always worked in mixed enterprise, but my responsibility was always the pigs. Although I thoroughly enjoyed the harvest and I enjoyed the cattle and all of that sort of thing, pigs was my passion. I went to farming school for a few months to get a certificate, which we need over here to impress our employers and to move through work. I then worked for my original employer for over 10 years. And in that time, I met and married my wife, Sue. And over the years, we had a large family of six children, three boys, three girls. I moved about 12 years after leaving school to another job with another farming family. And I worked a similar length of time with them. Again, totally responsible for the pigs, but we were doing cattle, beef cattle and veal calves, actually open yarded veal calves, which was interesting, and the harvest, which I always thoroughly enjoyed. With a big family and with wages the way they were then, we felt that it was time for me to look for something a bit more so that I could, really, I just wanted to bless my family a bit more and all. That was why I moved jobs. I moved into the breeding companies. I became a breeding stock salesman for a short period of time. We were obviously a good team because we were actually acquired by PIC. The company I went to was NPD, the National Pig Development Company in the UK. They were bought by PIC. And PIC, I think, sort of spotted something in me, my passion for production, and asked me if I would like to join the production team after a few months of continuing as a salesman at the time. I just didn't have to think about it. It was what I wanted to do. I ended up as a UK boar production manager, and at a time when we were moving towards the studs and AI and supplying our genetics in plastic bags, to be quite honest with you. That was a very interesting and exciting experience, and I really enjoyed that. In 98, I don't know about other parts of the world, but in 98, we really hit the buffers over here. I was working quite away from home with PIC a lot of the time, and decided I would volunteer for redundancy because I knew that would happen. I came home I looked for work over here, and eventually an opportunity came up for me to manage a startup in pig recording software, something I'd never had any involvement with, as my job with PIC was to my Monday morning desk was covered in all the off test results for the boars, each week. So I was fairly good at reading the data, but as for actually setting up recording and all the rest of it, was not in my skill set. But again, the company who interviewed saw something and decided to give me the job. So I became overnight, really, the managing director of a startup in the UK. And it was just at the turn of the century. So there was a big fear over here that everything would go pop in the computers because of the whole time sequence thing, except for in Windows. And there were no Windows programs over here. This was my big advantage. I had a Windows program. And we went from a standing start in 1999 to recording about 75% of the UK herd, which at the time was about 400,000 sows over here. And within that, I introduced, stopped selling the program and started an annual lease agreement with farmers, which was much more equitable for them. And I moved the system onto a central server, so we weren't charging off to every farm to support people or trying to explain things over a telephone. We could get straight into the program and help them. I managed the UK herd data for about 22, 23 years, and in fact, until this year. In 2013, I left the company because I wanted to look at developing advanced business metrics. I wanted to go deeper than continuous flow production metrics, which are quite conventional. And I believe there was an awful lot of data and information hidden in those metrics that I could tease out. So the last 10 years, I've been developing algorithms to go much deeper into all the data that we have. And we possess mountains of data, and there's a lot of wealth in that data that we're not tapping into. So that's taken me through the last 10 years. And the standout thing for me really is I've developed the algorithms into something I call Guilt Watch Together, because looking at all the figures, the thing that stands out most is we need process control in pig production, and sow retention is a foundational element of process control. And so we start with I start everything with the guilt, and everything flows from the guilt, and the success and the efficiencies all come from getting that part of the job right. I am a great believer in the sciences that are available to us as an industry. They help us to assimilate all the opportunities that we have. The sciences, I believe, are well ahead of where we are in the day, and there are some bridges to cross there. But fundamentally, it's such an exciting industry to be. It's more exciting today. I should be 70 in a few weeks. I started at 16. Well, I started at 12, really. I'm more excited today than I was at the age of 12, seeing my first litter born, because there's just so much opportunity for us as an industry now. But we have got to work together. We've got to work with the truth. And that's what data is. Data is the truth, as far as I'm concerned. You cannot argue with it unless you corrupt it. So that's really where I'm at. That's been my journey. And as I said, I genuinely mean this. I'm just so excited to still be part of this industry. I want to keep going till I'm gone. And I hope I get the opportunity to do that.
Well, I love your optimism. That's wonderful to have somebody who's been in this kind of tough business a long time and still be so excited about it. So yeah. That's great. And I hadn't thought about Y2K for a while, but I do remember the company that I worked with. We were worried about all of our production data at that time. And of course, all of our farms, things not working, like generators and et cetera. So I do remember that time. I was deep into production and a vet in the field at that time.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's an interesting thought back. So I want to learn a little bit more about this pig production philosophy, this design called Guilt Watch Together. And from what I understand, it's, this is my interpretation. So you tell me if this is how I should think about it, but it's kind of the guilt and her longevity in the herd, her production capacity for her whole life and her progeny as a lifetime concept, right? So her you know, from her birth to her end of life. And so then you look at kind of the economics of the whole herd and all of those females. That's kind of the concept. Am I right there?
Yes, I'm looking at life cycle. The very important part of this is I don't look at continuous flow. I look at life cycle. So I isolate cohorts of gilts coming in, and I follow them through as a herd within the herd. One of my analysis structures is herd within the herd, and we have got several different herds within the herd that we can analyze. For instance, you've got people use service targets. I don't know what they're like with you over there, but with here, we had a philosophy of service targets. So you serve to farrow a certain number of animals, and whatever your farrowing rate is doing, you hit your service target relative to your farrowing rate. That actually creates a ghost herd within the herd. And it's very easy to pick that herd out when you look at cohorts of animals and you follow them through. So you could put 1,000 sows down, you know, 1,000 gilts in, run them through, and suddenly you find your herd is now 1,250 animals and you're producing less pigs weaned for the 1,000 sows that you wanted in the first place, and you're finding that you're running statistically 250 sows that are doing nothing all year round. They're not the same animals, but they are a herd within the herd, and you can imagine the economic implications of that. So the cohort is key to what I'm doing, is isolating exclusive groups of animals and then following them through. And it's been 10 years, so I've learned a lot over that time, from where I started to where I am today. It's just been, you know, a great adventure, really, to discover what's going on underneath that continuous flow metric that we go to. I mean, I've literally got no time for anybody who talks to me about their pigs weaned per sow per year. To me, that figure is meaningless, because it's made up of two figures. It's made up of the litters per sow per year and the pigs weaned per litter. And it's interesting, I was talking to a group of farmers last week, 2 weeks ago, actually, and I put a table up of the top 10 farms. And this is of a population of 150,000 sows. The top 10 farms in this population ranked only on weaned per sow per year. And the herd that came second, actually, I then added into that, although they were ranked on that one figure, I added another 9 figures, performance figures in, and I indexed the whole thing. So I gave them a ranking of the index on the opposite side of the table. And the herd that ended up second dropped well down the list. 3 of the top 10 dropped right out of the list, down as far as ranking 50 when you looked at the whole performance. And in the case of the second farm, somebody kindly pointed out to me that she'd weaned more than she'd had born alive per sow per year. And the point there is that there was a compromise in the recording of the litters per sow per year. Animals were getting weaned earlier, so they were increasing the litters per sow per year, when in effect that meant that they were weaning more than they were having born, because of that single two-figure calculation. So that really lifted the lid on everything for me, and I went after the truth within the data, and that's what I'm doing. And as I said, sow retention is the thing that has stood out. Sow retention is responsible for so much of the efficiencies in pig production today. It's an absolutely fundamental figure, and it's key to process control, and it's very, very important. And the context I look at, or look at this through, is the 3 E's. I look at the economic implications of what I'm looking at. I look at the ethical implications of it, you know, the animal welfare effects and all the rest of the way we manage our animals. And I'm looking at the environmental impact, the efficiencies there as well. I look at efficiency and I look at responsibility within that context of the 3 E's.
I think the 3 E's that you talk about is really interesting, and I have a couple of questions regarding that a little bit more global. But first, you got my interest. I'm thinking about really down to the sow level and this herd within a herd, and I wondered what the difference, maybe a batch production system might alleviate a little bit of that. Do you have experience with a batch farrowing system?
Fortiva is moving beyond feed additives to create foundational ingredients that work with your pig's physiology to support resilience and health. With proven technologies like Ambateen, Flow Matrix, and Endura, Fortiva helps you address the toughest challenges in swine production. From gut health to growth performance, together we can make animals more resilient in the face of future challenges. Learn how at FortivaImpact.com.
Yes, I do. And I also have that in two dimensions. One, it's batch production. So we're looking at 3 week, but I'm also looking at single parity herds as well. So you bring all the gilts in and then you lock down the herd. That's it. We don't bring anything else in. It's the characteristic of outdoor production over here, because we tend to move sites every 2.5 or so years in rotation. So we just have a herd sitting there for that length of time, and we take them, what's left of them at parity 6, they're culled out, and all the equipment is moved onto the next site, and another, you know, group of gilts come in. There is very little difference in the continuous flow metrics of herd production between continuous flow and single parity. There are the same problems with sow retention. And because within that there's still mixing between sow groups, service groups, that, you know, we see all the same pressures really. And there's no, I don't see any advantages in actual production performance with single parity animals, and I don't see any particular improvement in production performance in batch farrowing, except that it can help the work schedules, and so the improvement comes through a better working schedule for the farm staff. But it's not necessarily, you know, a direct physical response to just going into batch. Batch helps the workforce more than it helps the pig herd, if that makes sense. Going back to herd within a herd, everybody has, whether you're weekly, you're 3 weekly, or you're 5 weekly batching, you will have herds within the herd that are, in fact, your service groups. So in a weekly production, if you're 4 week weaning, you've got 21 service groups. If you're 5 week weaning, you've got 22 service groups. And I run a report that looks at those herds on a monthly basis, and I update it for certain, you know, people who want it. So what you get in that report is you get your 21 herds of your weekly production in detail. They are ordered by parity. They are then highlighted by performance. And so when you go through that, you've got a complete map of your herd in 21 separate little herds within the herd. And if you think about it, the most important day in a sow's calendar is her next service date. If she's pregnant, then the most important date you are working towards is her next service date. And you're managing her through to that next service date. You want to bring her to that in the right condition to go on and have another production cycle, or you're going to cull her. If you're going to cull her because you're using elective culling within your management strategy, then you can start to line up the gilts to come in, the gilt to take her place, and therefore within the groups the gilts you want to come in. So you do that, and you've got 5 months to play with. You know, you're not suddenly scratching your head 3 weeks out from weaning, think, where are we going to get our gilts from? You've had them in train, you've been preparing them, and you're comfortable in your management. You're not having to think, what am I going to do next? You've already planned what you were going to do next 5 months ago, because you penciled that in to what's got to happen in terms of gilt flow. If you take that a stage further, you get to a point when you're working hard with your sow retention and you're lifting your retention up to where, I mean, my target for sow retention would be, you know, for me, perfection would be 85% at parity 5. Around the world, it barely averages 50%. That's 50 replacement gilts out of every 100 make it to parity 5, and there are an awful lot that don't make it that, you know, to that. You've got, I've seen retention rates at parity 5 as low as 20%. So that's the importance of improving sow retention. So you do a lot of things at the same time as you understand what you're really working with. So if you've got a really good sow retention, the next thing to do with your herds within the herd service groups is to fix the number of gilts you bring in. Then you're taking complete control the process of populating your service groups, your little herds within the herd. And that really works well once you've begun to get confidence and you're beginning to see the improvements step by step. And finally, within the service group control, we can then go back to the single parity herds and we can pinch an idea from there. And it is this, that if you're weekly production, you bring all your replacement gilts for the next 3 week period into the first week and you form an exclusive service group. And you just keep doing that every 3 weeks. So all the other service groups are a multiparous, but you're starting to create single parity service groups within the flow of your 21 herds within the herd as they go round their production cycles. It takes just over 2 years to have in a parity 6 herd all exclusive parity service groups. And they work like this with 5 week weaning. You have parity 1 and parity 5 in week 1, parity 2 and parity 3 in week 2, and parity 4 and parity 6 in week 3. And what it does is, because my objective in production management is to remove as much stress as we possibly can. And that is a massive management of stress. You are removing so much stress. You never mix animals. You get the whole thing under control. And I can imagine every pig producer sitting there listening to this and thinking, yes, but this happens and that happens. And I know all those things happen. So what you're doing is you're building that up. And you're building up and it takes you back to sow retention. If you can get your sow retention right, then you can do all these other things. This is what really is important. And so that's what's exciting, because it is, I see people getting nearer and nearer that. I've got somebody whose records will show quite clearly that they are consistently reaching a 76, 77% retention rate at parity 5. And I know they can go on and improve that further. The thing there is that they then go on and keep sows to parity 10 and parity 11. Perhaps we'll talk about the effect of that in a minute. It's good, it looks good, but economically it doesn't stack up because you've got a lot of animals then sitting in sow spaces that the more productive younger animals should be taking up, but they're not because these animals are being held onto. It's got a low replacement rate, but the economics of it don't really work. So it's really interesting what we can do, but it all is predicated on getting our sow retention right in the first place. And that's the target, got to be the target, you know, quite clearly. And it's interesting. The big issue, excuse me, the big issue is that we've got a sow mortality problem. I hear it, or wherever I go, or sow mortality, big point of concentration at the moment, because our sow mortality is 15, 20%, whatever. Sow mortality is 100%, period. Sow mortality is 100%. Sow mortality is divided into two central references, dead on farm or electively culled. But the impact of a sow being removed from the farm, that is sow mortality. So you've got to start to open sow mortality up and look at every aspect of it and what you really mean by sow mortality. Because sow mortality, when the sums are done, when I see the arguments around sow mortality, excuse me, they will look at you know, the cost of removing an animal and all these things will come into it. Where fundamentally, sow mortality is 100%. And the more of sow mortality that is elective culling, the more control you've got over your sow mortality. So if your sow mortality is only 5%, then you have got control over 95% of your sow mortality. And if within that you're achieving really good sow retention, then your elective culling is happening when you want it to, which is at parity 5, parity 6. So that's another way of kind of looking at the data and thinking, wow, there's much more to this than meets the eye. And I think what drives me is a desire to learn how things are, not how I see them. or not how they seem when I look at them. I want to learn how things are. And this is what the last 10 years for me has been all about. I'm determined to learn how things are in this industry for me, in my area of it, which is production. And this whole business of looking at life cycles has just took the lid off it. It's like opening a Pandora's box. And it's wonderful because you've got so many challenges to begin to take on and to move forward with. And that is really exciting. And the point I've got to most recently, I do a three-stage report. My first report is a one pig report. So I take the gilt at 8 kilos, weaned off her mum. She's an F1. I take her through to 130 kilos. I don't know what that is in pounds, because sadly we moved to kilos many years ago over here. I prefer pounds. And I then, 250 days. So I've got a weight that she comes in, a weight that I want her to be at when I serve her into the breeding herd, and an age. So I've got to grow her at 550 grams a day. Not the kind of wonderful growth rates that the geneticists have been able to achieve in all the work that they've done over the last 60 years. I have a challenge. I've got to prepare that sow. So everybody's talking about sow longevity at the moment. And to me, sow longevity and any genetic, connection, if there's a gene for sow longevity, well and good. But I'm not going to rely on any genes for sow longevity. You've given me a gilt that produces big litters and is 50% of my, my finished pig. It's my job to prepare that gilt. Now, I want the breeding companies to tell me how to prepare that gilt. And I want my gilt from my experiences to be around 130 kilos, 250 days, and I'll do the rest when it comes to sow retention. I would like to some advice on what she's meant to weigh as she goes into farrow. At the end of each of those production cycles, how much of sow condition she can afford to lose in lactation, what she's going to weigh at the next service for the next production cycle. That's the kind of information that I need. It's my job to prepare that animal. And if I get that preparation right in the way I feed her, then I'm doing my job. It's the husbandry. And all that has, in my working lifetime, got lost. It's really got lost. We just got, pigs weaned per sow per year. I've got an FCR of this and a daily gain of this, and I'm cooking on gas. And the trouble is, what's left for the stock people to do? There's no art and craft anymore. There's no understanding at that level. And it's interesting. If I go back to the start of my working life, I learned off men who probably started their working life now relative to my age 100 years ago. So they were giving me all this old stuff that they'd learned from their dads, and you can see, and some of it actually still carries. We know all about it now, and we understand the science of it, but the bare facts still carry today. And that's exciting, because now I know far more than they did, because the scientists are informing me as to why this particular thing is. And one of the things that stuck with me, one of the few things that I still hold on to, is that for me, a gilt is a gilt until she farrows her second litter, and I will treat her thus. So she is still, she's not fully formed into a sow, and I'm not going to just, she has her first litter and that's it, you're a sow, join the rest and get on with it. No, she's a gilt still, and I still want to be looking after her as a gilt. I'm still in that period of preparation, the preparation through to entering the herd, and now the preparation into what I would call the engine room. So when I look at a herd analysis, I look at parities 1 and 2 as the gilt herd. There's another herds within the herd here. Parities 1 and 2 are the gilt herd. Parities 3, 4, and 5 are my engine room. They are the power of the herd. Parities 6 and above, well, parity 6 can go two ways. It can be my risk herd, or it can be my herd that's supporting any downstream upstream failure in the sows, because there'll be a degree of that. So my sixes are a confirmation of the very best animals who've gone all the way through, and I only retain the sixes that have had no breeding failure in their record. But they really are the premier animals in my herd. Anything above that is risk. So you've got the risk herd at the far end, the engine room in the middle, and the gilt herd in parities one and two. And again, that's all part of the pattern of taking control and trying to drive for this sow retention, which delivers so much. So that's really important. And I've had the joy very recently of connecting with three, I call them young men. They're a little bit more than young, but they're young men. They're all co-founders of a company that is building, and it's building self-contained environments, and it'll either retrofit old buildings or it will come and build you a new building. And we're just swapping. I speak to them every Thursday evening. We link up, we have fun, but we're sharing ideas. Bit like the old boys when I started out, sharing ideas with me, sharing their experience. And I love acronyms, so I've called this thing that we're doing, I've called that LEAP, because it's a learning exchange asset partnership. In other words, we're exchanging our learning. I'm learning a lot off them about biosecurity and this kind of thing, and how we can really control the environment within the house. And it's so I'm sharing my assets with them, they're sharing my assets with that's the partnership. There's absolutely no financial connection in any shape or form. It is just one of sharing experience from our lives in the and they're much cleverer than I am anyway, so I'm probably getting the advantage in this particular exchange. But even in that, the excitement that I feel when I think, okay, so we can stick a building down now, we can stick it on a slatted floor, we stick it over a slurry pit, and suddenly the world opens up again. And I was on a farm in Scotland just a few days ago with a young man who wants to do his own research and development. And we that was weaning day, so we'd walked around, we'd looked at the weaning. I'd made some comments about the way they were weaning. I prefer to wean whole litters. I certainly like to see pigs sexed fairly early on into male and female. They were doing neither. They were doing smalls, mediums and larges, and they were all together. So we had the conversation. Then we went to this room that he's building at the moment. So he's got a slatted floor, lovely insulated, and it's just a shell. It's going to be a farrowing shed. And I suggested these couple of thoughts to him. I said, you've got a wonderful opportunity here. You could actually make this a dual-purpose shed, because we'd been in the flat decks for weaning and looking at the latest weanings going in. You can make a farrowing shed here, which you then convert into a flat deck on weaning day. So you just take the sows out and you switch your infrastructure a little bit to accommodate what you need for the weaners that you have in the flat deck at the moment. And then you can keep them in there for however many flat decks and farrowing rooms you've got that you can convert into the same purpose. So all of your farrowing flat deck is one, one set of buildings now, but they're dual purpose. So you're keeping whole litters together, and your actual hard work at weaning, which is, filtering them out and where you want them to go, that will happen at 20, 25 kilos, perhaps, depending on how many buildings you've got. But the other thing you gain from that is you now, because it's a, blood, sweat and tears day weaning on a lot of farms, you can now just take the sows away. They're weaned, and you can now decide when you're going to wean them. If you wean them on Sunday, then you can wean them at the end. You can serve them at the end of the week, and your farrowings will start at the start of the week when they reach the end of their production cycle. So you've suddenly got even more control just by thinking things through a bit more and taking the advantage. And then to cap it all, you can look at the gas extraction from the slurry pit, which produces hydrogen and ammonia, and you're building this wonderful circular economy within your building. Because to go again back to the start of my working life, one of the first things somebody told me about pigs was you can use everything but the squeak. In other words, every part of the pig is recyclable in one one way or another. And now we're looking at the waste from the pig, the muck, and we're looking at you know, making that part of our circular economy of the business of pig production. So it's just, you know, probably people think I'm daft, but that's what is exciting. We are in an exciting industry, despite, and I have to be honest, I've been through several cycles of downturn and the pain of that. And I took redundancy along the way as part of that. I do feel the impact of that, and that's hard. But I would throw into that, though I'm a one-man band, these last 10 years have been the hardest 10 years of my working life, and they have cost me the most on more than one level. But that is part of the nature of the industry we're in, you know, and obviously this time around, a lot of people have got out, a lot of family farms have either been gobbled up by the integrators or they've gone. It's part of the life that we live. So it marks the character of people in this industry. And that's also very, very much part of my passion for the industry. It's a wonderful community of people to work in. You know, from the cleverest scientists to the young people just starting out on the farms, there's something vocational about the people, you know, the majority of the people in this industry. And that's kind of special. That's kind of precious in a lived life, you know. And I've had a privileged life and all the way through. But, you know, we don't just live for work. We live for the quality of life. And I work in an industry that actually gives a lot in that area of life. I get a lot from the quality of the people, and I get a lot from watching just how well they handle everything that they're up against, because they get out of get out of bed every day, and they've probably got one of the highest levels of risk, you know, in any industry, really. You know, it's so unpredictable. It's so uncertain. They face more uncertainty than most industries. So they face challenges, which I think make people, actually. They develop those people. And that's where that quality of person in the industry really comes from. So that's really exciting. You know, that's just wonderful. I waffle on a bit. You'll have to stop me.
No, you're great.
A worldwide leader in animal nutrition, Adiseo's portfolio of products includes methionine, the full range of vitamins, enzymes, organic selenium, probiotics, mycotoxin management strategies, and palatability products. With such a diverse offering, Adiseo supports its customers with a broad range of expertise, tools, and services to help them maintain a competitive advantage. Adiseo, fueling predictable profits. To learn more, visit Adiseo at www.adiseo.com.
You touched on most of the things that I had that I wanted to chat about, so it was perfect. You didn't.
Oh, right.
I didn't do any work, so I want to talk just a little bit more about the very last topic, and it's about kind of the passion and the tenacity of pig producers, and I think of people in agriculture, maybe if you even widen that. And my husband is a dairy veterinarian, and so he and I have had conversations just about the toughness of people and you know, people that are involved in ag, you know, and all of the trials that they go through. And so, you know, how can we as professionals and you know, friends and colleagues in the area continue to, you know, have conversations about, you know, mental health and just making sure that, you know, our clients and our friends are taken care of. And so I think that's something that, those of us that have seen, you know, you certainly more than I have, but, you know, after 20 years, I definitely understand the impacts that the cycles and the economics can have on, you know, the passionate people in this industry. So how can we support each other better?
I think in my early life, I did suffer. From the age, ironically, although I'm excited about everything, I was treated quite early on as a teenager for depression. And unfortunately, that developed. And I had a series of breakdowns early on in my marriage that culminated in a mental breakdown. And I was hospitalized for a while. And I came out of that and I knew, I discovered, and I won't bother to go into the detail, but I knew why the things were happening to me. I found the reasons why. So I knew what I'd got to do. And I get up every morning and I sit on the edge of the bed and I can go to the left and I can go into the darkness that has been not far away from me through most of my life, or I can choose to go to the right. And I choose to go to the right. It's almost a, you know, a daily action. I will go to the right. And out there is all the opportunity and all the wonderful things that go on. In the dark areas, what we can do for each other is try and understand the other person. And people will open up when they begin to know they're being understood. So my wife would listen to the biggest load of nonsense coming out of me in the worst times, but she would listen and she would keep listening. I owe her an incredible debt of gratitude. They just want to be heard, but they have such a low view of themselves that it's a job to even prize them open because they don't think they've got anything of value to offer. And when you're struggling as a farmer, sometimes the struggles confirm how you feel about yourself, which isn't actually true. And so our job is to say that, you know, what's happening isn't you. You know, deep in your heart, you're a farmer because that's what you love. That's what you love to do. We're often people who can't, you know, we don't express very well, yet we have wonderful ideas and we can innovate. But you have to draw that out. There's a lot of introversion, I think. That's the predominant temperament within farming. Get them together and you get the extrovert, but they work on their own so much that tends to emphasize the introvert in a person. So it's the connection. We've got to make connection, and listening is the first part of connecting. And that's really important to the person who's really struggling. Even if that means sitting in silence, if you're prepared to sit in silence with somebody, they know you care. And it goes that deep. And then together you walk up out of that silence, out of that darkness, and you build relationships which, you know, are valuable. And those people that often are struggling the most actually have the most to offer the industry in which we work, but nobody takes the time to break through the silences, to break through the darkness that you can see them in. And we just stand on the outside of them going, I don't really know what to do here. Well, as somebody who has, you know, suffered, but also found, you know, an incredible incredible life out of that, and it adds value to why I see everything the way I do. It's important to just listen, you know, to listen and to learn how things are. That's what I said earlier on in this conversation. To me, what drives me in life now is I want to learn how things are, not how they seem, not how I think I see them, but how are they? And for me, in my work, it's been cracking open the data and thinking, actually, that result didn't show me that this is actually happening here, but now I've applied a different calculation in there, this is what is happening, and that's fantastic. And so in that situation, you know, you have to go, people who have struggled, they get you, straight away, they understand you, so they're looking for the genuineness, the authenticity within you. And when they connect with that, they're safe. They feel safe. We've got to make people feel safe. And to make them feel safe is to say, actually, you will be all right because you are all right. Whatever you feel about yourself, I don't feel that. And I'm going to show you why I don't feel that, you know. And so you're positive with them. But it's a journey. It's not, I'll go and visit Jack and in an hour's time I'll lift him off his backside and he'll be out there happy as Larry, you know, shoveling hay. No, you start a journey with them, but you almost by your attitude to them say, I'm going to stick on this journey with you because you, to me, are precious. You know, you're part of the life, part of the world I live in. There's a lot to you that you don't seem to be able to express yourself. And that's where I would say, that's where I would go with in my answer to your question. I don't know whether that's helpful or not, but that's how I see it. And for me, I've got to say, my wife and I, we became Christians when we were older. And that also brings a dimension to life, which I think a lot in the community of farming actually share that not everyone, but that outlook on life also. And you get it in the conversations, it pops up, you know. So it's that deep felt, you know, self, really. It's discovering yourself, and we sometimes have to help each other discover more of ourselves, much as I'm trying to help farmers discover more of what they can, you know, find within their own businesses to latch onto. Farmers innovate. You give them one idea and they'll come back with three more. You know, that's part of the privilege, part of the joy. I'm not particularly clever. I just have the opportunity and the privilege of being able to think a little bit away from the job because of the data and everything that's made available to me. But I'll have a discussion with a farmer, and next thing you know, he's got three more ideas, and you know, I pinch them and go off.
I agree with you. I mean, I've been around. My grandfather was a farmer. My dad was a farmer, and farmers all my life. And they're very innovative. And so the ideas and the innovation, we don't have to bring to them because they have it. We have to be their support network, both in business as well as a personal support. And I really appreciate you sharing that with me and how we can be there for each other. And, you know, it sounds like be there and listen and show you care. It sounds simple for a tough subject, but, you know, to really open up and be there for each other.
I'd like to add one more thing. I think me now at my age, I don't care what people think anymore, because I'm past my sell by date anyway. And so I fight. And so, for instance, I write a column over here once a month, and this week my column came out, and I was able to make the statement that vocational pig producers care for their sick pigs better than our National Health Service is currently able to care for our sick people. And we need to get the balance right. We get a lot of the problems of, you know, rogue videos and all that over here. We're really under the cosh at the moment. But I'm on the front foot. I'll go straight back out and say, I'm sorry, that's an unsubstantiated assumption that you're making here. And if you come in and look, you will see how well these animals are actually cared for. And the whole animal welfare, we need to be out on the front foot, because we're allowing the media to say what it likes. And as I say, most of it is unsubstantiated assumptions. So, yeah, that bit I really love now. I will go out and I will fight, not loudly or opinionated, just sharing from experience. You need to go and look, because you're getting it wrong, you know. The other thing over here is we're 50% outdoor, 50% indoor virtually, and everybody's assuming that outdoor is better. No, it's not better. It's different, but it's not better. And it's no better advert for animal welfare than indoor production if you go to a well-run indoor farm. So we need to fight as well. And I think sometimes that's what people who struggle feel. Nobody's fighting for me. You know, nobody's representing me, and I'm becoming weighed down. If I switch the news on, if I read a newspaper, if I talk to somebody in the supermarket, they're all on about animal welfare and how cruel we are, you know. And I got nobody seeming to, out of the industry, stand up and shout. And it's important. Just naming one name on LinkedIn today, Todd Thurman had a post around that area. Good for him. You know, he's saying, look, we need to look at this properly. We need to understand what's going on here properly and not be under the weight of pressure that we are at the moment from the animal welfare lobby. And I will stand with him in that. I agree with that entirely.
Yeah, we definitely have to be advocates for what we do and what we stand for. And I think that kind of envelopes into the general personality of farmers, and you know, we're not boastful. And so some of that, you know, is hard for us to do, but absolutely. And you know, like you said, you can say it as you see it now at this point in your career. And I think we need that, right?
Yeah, I often get, "Granddad, you can't say that." Like, I can, and I am.
Yep, absolutely.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at fortivaimpact.com. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Trial Nutrition North America, everything we do is driven by passion and backed by science. Essential Ag Solutions, bringing innovative science-based solutions to livestock producers. Healthy Farms by Bioverse, your manure management experts. SUNY is a professional solution provider for enzymes, probiotics, and functional additives. We offer customized formulas to target nutritional issues in livestock and maximize the utility of animal feed. Find us at SUNY.com, spelled S-U-N-H-Y, for more information.
Well, I think we could talk for another hour because it's been very, very wonderful. And I want to tell the listeners that you have some great articles on your LinkedIn page. So if you want to learn more and dig in a little deeper about some of the specific topics that we just barely covered, visit Stephen's LinkedIn page. And so I appreciate reading some of those and keep them up.
Thank you.
And so as we round up here, there's three questions that we always ask our guests. And so the first one is, give us your favorite book or resource that you use that's in the area of your expertise.
A book that has really helped me is, I was never the brightest boy at school, but it helped me understand what we're up against and what every farmer is up against. It's called Radical Uncertainty. It's written by two economists, one of who was the governor of Bank of England. John Kay is an economist, and Mervyn King was the governor of the Bank of England. They wrote a book 5 or 6 years ago called Radical Uncertainty. And it really does help you understand risk management and get your whole mind thinking about risk management. And to be honest, it's one of the main elements of farming. It is risk management. And so you learn to work out what you can manage and what you can't manage. And I think that helped me a lot, really. I mean, I could think of a score of books that I'd love to talk about. But if I had to say one that really helps, that's the one for me that really got me thinking about risk management and liability and all of that kind of thing, which pig herds carry a massive economic liability, which if you suddenly stop them with a disease or you close them down over a welfare issue, they have got a huge economic liability being carried at that moment. And that is a huge risk to be running with every day. So that's a good book to look at.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And how about your favorite book or resource outside of ag?
Well, I have a, the only book that I read every day, and it's annual, it goes right. So it's a book of daily readings, basically. And it's by an old guy who died many, many years ago called Oswald Chambers. It's My Utmost for His Highest. And I read it, and there's always something new every year on the page that I'd read last year and didn't get when I read it last year. So, you know, anybody who finds something that inspires them, and that's a choice. So I can't impose that choice on anybody. But I would say find something that gets to your heart, that engages with the whole of who you are. Look for a book, talk to friends. They may have their own suggestions. Talk to people about you. I think your question is a wonderful question. And maybe my recommendation is go and ask everybody else the question that I've just been asked. What is the book that you would choose? And you will get a list of inspirational books. It's not, you know, the funniest book I've read, or, you know, it's the books that inspired you to be a better person, really. I think that's where I would look.
Absolutely. And I like the daily reflection as well. I do something similar.
Yeah.
And so the last one, Stephen, is,
yes,
to share with us an attribute or characteristic that you feel professionals have that puts them apart from other people?
I think where you've got professionals who are, you know, clearly focused, I think that's the key. I think I use the word focused in focused strategic precision husbandry, because focused is a word that was applied to people like Charles Darwin, who they focused on a specific subject. They weren't polymaths. They went as deeply into the subject that was closest to their heart. So when you find professionals that are passionate about what they do, and you get to know them and you realize they are completely focused, these are the people that leave something in the world when it's their time to go. And so, you know, these people, there's a massive legacy left in this world from people who were focused in what they were doing. So in the professions, whatever they are, it's those people that are the set that sets them apart from everybody else. And that's really important. My biggest contention in my industry is with sales and marketing. At all times, really, we are overpromised so much, and yet within the promise is real promise. But it's often the work of the scientists that's being tarted up and pushed out too soon. It's those that are focused, really focused, that leave something else.
I think those are great thoughts to end with. I so much have enjoyed meeting you and visiting with you, and I can see the passion on your face and your excitement for our industry, and so I appreciate your time. Again, thanks for listening. This is Stephen Hall, and have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Tom. Really appreciate it.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.